In today's episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast, how to transition from vegetarian to meat eating, the pros and cons of circumcision, why you should avoid red rice yeast, fast ways to heal stress fractures, and getting rid of varicose veins.
Welcome to the BenGreenfieldFitness.com podcast. We provide you with free exercise, nutrition, weight loss, triathlon, and wellness advice from the top fitness experts in the nation. So whether you're an Ironman triathlete or you're just trying to shed a few pounds, get ready for non-run-of-the-mill, cutting-edge content from BenGreenfieldFitness.com.
All right, after one false start, we are ready to rock.
Brock had to restart his computer. You had to restart your computer, and it took like 15 minutes to restart, dude.
That's because I've got all this extra malware and stuff on my computer to make sure that everybody in the world can see what I'm doing at all times.
Extra what?
Malware. You know, the stuff that like
monitors
everything you do and sends it to the gangsters in Russia.
Yeah, we actually call it malware here in the United States of America.
Yeah, if you can make a word sound more harsh, that's what the Americans do.
Mal. Well, today...
malware.
It should be.
How y'all doing?
If it's any consolation, today will be a little bit easier for you because my kids are at camp all week. So we've got no toilets flushing in the background, no pets
no
getting
screaming.
Teased, no screaming, no eating.
Nice.
You listeners would be surprised at the amount of post audio cutting that has to take place when you're recording from a home office. It's pretty
nuts. I think my favorite thing was editing your audiobook, and there was actually what I believe was a goat in the background at one point.
Goat. That may have just been the gerbil, but we don't talk about that.
Don't squeeze the gerbil. Go on over to BenGreenfieldFitness.com/251 to find these next few awesome links that Ben's about to tell us all about.
Let's jump right in, man. Let's start with the moon. I don't know if you saw this article
that came out. I did. It's pretty interesting.
Trouble sleeping. It's probably the moon's fault. Stupid moon.
Stupid moon.
So the moon has these things that are called circa lunar rhythms. And as our listeners know, we're big time into like enhancing your sleep just because all sorts of cool things happen, you know, in terms of neuronal recovery and repair when you're sleeping.
Sleeping.
And it turns out that lunar rhythms influence sleep in humans. And I'm going to put a link in the show notes to this article. But it's really cool. It basically talks about how the moon's gravitational pull and also the light that's emitted by the moon affects everything from like how deep you sleep to like menstrual cycles to other human sexual behaviors, as well as coral sex, which I thought was just kind of an interesting random thing to throw into the article.
I want to know how they even thought to look there. That's
interesting. I want to know how coral have sex. I didn't know coral could do that, but anyways, so the next time I'm snorkeling.
I'm
scientists found that during the time of full moon, what happens is brain activity related to deep sleep drops by 30%, and people take 5 minutes longer on average to fall asleep, and they sleep for 20 minutes less. And that might not seem like much, but what it probably indicates is that just like we kind of sort of already know due to, you know, iPad insomnia or whatever, that we shouldn't be using a ton of artificial light at night, it turns out that by kind of honing in on both the sun in the morning and the moon at night, that we can really keep ourselves locked in to these cool sleep cycles. So just more evidence that we all need to move out to the wilderness and live in tents.
See-through tents, so you really get the circadian rhythm of the moon and the sun. And although that does that mean that we shouldn't have those really heavy curtains and like the real light blocking curtains on the window?
that's like kind of an ongoing argument in the whole like primal ancestral community, is whether or not black curtains, because they block out sun, moon, stars, everything, are actually a good or a bad idea. I can tell you one thing. I think it depends sometimes on you and how mussed up you are, like chemically.
Yeah.
So we don't have blackout curtains. Our room is like super bright light in the morning. If it's a full moon, it's going to be bright at night. I use a sleep mask and I use sleep earplugs and white noise apps and all this other geeked out stuff. My wife, nothing. Sleeps on her back, sits, and she sleeps like 9 or 10 hours a night. My wife does. Like, she goes to bed at 10 and she rolls out of bed like 7 or 8 a.m. And it's nuts. I don't know how she does it, but she doesn't use anything at all. She just gets into bed and like falls asleep. And so I think it depends a little bit, but I would say that, I suspect that the less we use when it comes to blackout curtains and stuff like that, the better, assuming we're not exposing ourselves to a lot of other artificial light. And that is another important variable here. My wife doesn't work on the computer. She doesn't watch TV. Like, at night, she's like just kind of chilling, you know, sometimes working in the kitchen or she'll be like out in the garden or whatever. So I think that probably helps her along a little bit too. I think you do have to hack things once you're doing, you know, if you're like me and you're writing an article till 9 o'clock at night, you know, you might have to hack things a little bit. So there you go.
I suspect it probably has something to do, or your location would also influence that. Like, if you're really far north and you're getting basically like no sunlight in the winter and all sunlight in the summer, that absolutely messes it up. So that would be a great case for definitely having some extra light and some heavy curtains.
And possibly also the next thing I want to talk about, which is colostrum. And colostrum is kind of cool. It's this thick fluid that's produced as a precursor to mother's milk. So I know I just grossed out all the vegans and vegetarians listening in, but you find it in...
Even vegans had some breast milk at some point.
You find it in humans, yeah, maybe, goats and other mammals. Colostrum is used to kind of jumpstart a newborn's undeveloped immune system and turn a baby animal into a big animal, and it has a bunch of cool properties in terms of its ability to heal the gut lining. It's got, like, lactoferrin in it, which helps you out with iron absorption, and has a bunch of cool antimicrobial characteristics. It's got like growth precursors in it, growth hormone in it. But the reason I'm talking about it right now is because they just came out with a study on colostrum last week where they gave about 10 grams of colostrum to cyclists who were doing 5 days of hardcore cycling efforts. And two things that we've talked about on this show before, a heart rate variability and testosterone, were both improved in the group that used colostrum versus a control group that just used whey protein. So it's really interesting that you can improve your heart rate variability and you can also maintain your testosterone. And they looked at cortisol too and found better cortisol rhythmicity, which means that cortisol kind of went up in the morning like it's supposed to and down towards the end of the day. So very, very cool stuff. And whereas... You know, I don't necessarily think that people need to be taking colostrum if they're just kind of living a normal life, not going out and doing stupid long events like an Ironman triathlon or a 5-day like cycling event or something. It's like, this is better living through science. So we isolate this stuff, get it from I use Capra colostrum, which is from an organic goat farm actually out here in Washington State. And I load with it. So the way that you use colostrum is you load with it similar to creatine. So what you would do is, even though they use 10 milligrams in this study, a lot of previous studies have shown benefits from as few as 3 milligrams and up to about 6 milligrams. But what you do is you take 6 milligrams a day of colostrum, which if you're using Capra colostrum, that'd be like 8 capsules, so like 4 in the morning, 4 in the evening, and you load with that for 2 weeks before whatever big important event you're going to do. It decreases gut permeability too, meaning that especially when you're in hot conditions and you tend to get undigested food particles crossing that lining between your gut and your bloodstream, that doesn't happen as much. Colostrum helps to basically like seal up what's called zonulin, which are these linings in your small intestine. And so it helps with that too. Like, it helps you not have gut issues when you're out competing. So it's legal. And, you know, theoretically, if you took a crap load of it, you might test positive for human growth hormone, or for tests that detect HGH, but I think you'd have to take a heck of a lot of colostrum. I'm not worried. So anyways,
So you know what this actually, you know what this leads to though, is we need to talk to the guys over at Mount Capra and get them to include that in one of their protein powders.
Yeah, that'd
like the deep 30 plus colostrum would be, that would be like magic.
That would be kind of cool if they combined colostrum and protein. I'm not sure why they don't, because probiotics and colostrum taken together have pretty good effect. And the deep 30 protein that Mount Capra makes has probiotics in it. So
yeah.
I'll have to talk to Joe. He's like their chief nutrition scientist over there. He's one of my buddies. I should ask him why they don't add colostrum to their protein, because that'd be interesting. But right now, I just, like, I'm leading up to Ironman Canada, for example. So I pop 4 in the morning and 4 in the evening and bada boom, bada bing. There you go. So
beautiful.
Last thing was a couple of studies that came out that were, I believe both of them were done in the Netherlands, but they looked at cold thermogenesis and cold exposure and specifically sitting in a cool room, not even the cold room, a cool room. It was like 68 degrees.
Oh, so
Fahrenheit.
Not like sitting in an ice bath or something, but just a room.
No, it was actually, I think I just said 68. It was 59 to 61 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 15 to 16 degrees Celsius in one room.
I was just going to do that conversion for everybody.
Yeah, people were sitting in shorts and a t-shirt in that room for a few hours. And then the other study, it was about 63 Fahrenheit. So that was 17 Celsius. And in both studies, they found increased metabolism, increased resting energy expenditure, which is the same thing as increased metabolism, but it just made me sound smarter to say increased resting energy expenditure. And a decrease of 5% in body fat mass compared to a control group, which is crazy. I mean,
that was over 6 weeks?
That's not 5 pounds. That's 5% body fat mass. And that was for 6 weeks. And that was just not doing anything
different except
sitting, twiddling your thumbs, bored to death, sitting in a cold room. But of course, you could just keep
for 2 hours a day.
Yeah. Like what I do is I get up in the morning. I usually wander around in my boxers or my board shorts or whatever for as long as I can. I don't put on a shirt. If I am eating a lot of food or it's really warm outside, I'll put on my Cool Fat Burner vest, which I get from coolfatburner.com. And it's this vest that hits all the brown adipose tissues on your body.
And they came out with a new version too, I think. Like the version 2.0.
Cool Fat Burner 2.0.
You have.
What makes it better?
I think it's just a little different construction. I don't think it's actually better. They just
does it have like spikes.
I remember seeing some
spikes coming out the shoulder, like Bane from Batman. It just looks.
I think it's got like it plays music and makes you coffee.
Exactly. Cold thermogenesis complete. You put on the Cool Fat Burner vest and that works. But you can, like, this study shows that you can literally just turn down the friggin' thermostat in your house. And even that has a pretty cool effect. Plus, I think that I personally sleep better when it's cold anyways, so I'm a fan. Anyways, I'll link to the studies in the show note, but pretty cool stuff. And I think that, and this is something that in the article that I'll link to, they actually expound upon, but we kind of have all these modern conveniences like heating, for example, and those make our lives more comfortable.
Fire,
and perhaps in some cases our body adapts and burns more fat when it's just a little bit uncomfortable. So cool stuff.
Special announcements.
So you're heading up to Ironman Canada pretty darn soon, only a couple weeks.
I did my last long run on Monday. I ran 20 miles on Monday. I haven't run 20 miles I haven't run 20 miles in a long time.
I'm getting you accustomed to how people are going to talk to you.
I know you are, but I'm trying to brag about my run. And,
okay,
Yeah, because I'm doing
20 miles.
There you go. I'm doing the whole minimalist training thing. And so, you know, this means that one time before Ironman, I got to do one long run, which just beats the pants off of running long every weekend. Yeah. So every weekend up till this point, I've only run 60 to 90 minutes, save for getting lost up in when I went to check out the course in Canada and accidentally running more like 2 hours. Anyways, though, ran 20 miles. The way I do it mentally is I run out 10 miles and then I kind of have to get home and I'm too embarrassed to call my wife to come pick me up. So I have to run back 10 miles and that's the trick I play on myself. So anyway, so
I'm surprised you don't see through that ruse.
Nope, my brain hasn't figured it out yet, apparently. So anyways, though, ran 20 miles, and that was like my last long training session. So now I just sit around, get ready to race. And the reason we're even talking about this is for any of you who are triathletes who are going to be up at Ironman Canada, just announce over at the Ben Greenfield Facebook page, and we'll link to this in the show notes. We're going to have a pre-race meetup. It's going to be Friday, August 23rd, noon. At this place called Mogul's Coffee House up there in like the main square at Whistler. So we'll put all the details or deets, as the cool people say, in the show notes.
All the deets.
We'll put all the deets in the show notes at bengreenfieldfitness.com/251. Go check it out if you're going to be up there.
If I get my act together in enough time, I'll be there too.
Brock will be there.
I get into Vancouver on the 22nd, so I just have to. to make sure I don't miss the morning bus on the 23rd, and I will be there as well.
So if you want to come and hang out.
We could do a live show.
We could do a live show. So come and hang out with Brock and I, ask your last-minute race questions, chill, plan our big post-race parties, whatever, if you're going to be up at Whistler. So couple other things. If you're going to be at the Ancestral Health Symposium, come say hi. You're going to see me pretty much on stage the whole time because I'm leading all the stretch and the workout breaks and everything during the entire dang thing.
You're just
going to
sit in on every one of the seminars, throw your two cents in.
I'll also be on a panel with Mark Sisson, Rob Wolf, Jimmy Moore, Jamie Scott, and myself are doing a panel on the ketogenic diet for athlete performance. So,
wow, how did you get paired up with those losers?
I don't know, but we'll be up there. Ketogenic
diets are not some of the best minds in this department at all.
So if you're going to the Ancestral Health Symposium, then come and see me look really dumb next to a bunch of really smart dudes. The next thing I wanted to mention, and I promise I won't go on with too many special announcements, but September 10th through the 12th, if you live in London, I will be at the Global Business Triathlon Conference, and I've got about 50 people on a list right now of people who have emailed me who are listeners in London who want to do a meetup on, I believe it would be Saturday the 13th and Sunday the 14th. I might have those days wrong, but it's kind of like September 13th to 15th-ish. Email me, ben@bengreenfieldfitness.com, if you want to find out about the meetup that we're going to have, which from what I understand from everyone who's emailed me so far is probably going to be at like some kind of a pub near Hyde Park. So anyways, nice. There you go. And that's the same weekend as the ITU Triathlon World Championships in Hyde Park. So there's going to be a lot of triathletes and stuff in town, and we're just going to get together and have a fun little meetup. So that is going to be in London.
Sounds delightful.
Delightful. And tea.
Sounds
crumpets.
Very civilized.
Yes, very civilized, very civilized.
Quite. We'll
go and say hello to the Queen and see the new grandchild, the baby thing, royal. Royal baby thing.
The baby thing.
Mm. Okay, last thing. There's one freaking slot left in the Thailand trip.
One slot.
So if you want to get in on the adventure of a lifetime in Thailand, we've talked about enough on this show before to where you probably already know about it, but it is going to be anywhere. You kind of have the option to come for anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks, but it's going to be 2 to 3 weeks of hardcore fun, family friendly. You can bring your wife, you can bring your kids, you can bring your girlfriend, your significant other, your dog, your goat, your gerbil, whatever. But Thailand. Here's the URL.
I don't know about that.
Jot this down or remember it. Gerbil might get taken at customs. URL probably is pacificfit.net/Thailand. That's pacificfit.net/Thailand. If you want to go in there and get in, I've negotiated fat room discounts, boat trips, excursions. We are just going to have a ton of fun. Might even eat some scorpions and drink some snake blood. We'll see about that. But yeah.
Well, that's part of the morning buffet, so you may as well.
Morning buffet. Come and do it.
Yeah.
Get the inside edge from Ben Greenfield Fitness delivered straight to your phone. Just text the word fitness to 411247 and you'll instantly get exclusive VIP discounts and insider tips that no one else will ever see except you. Do it now. Text the word fitness to 411247 and you'll be in Ben's VIP text club for free.
Listener Q&A. Hi, Ben and Brock. This is Kim, and I am a 29-year vegetarian. I've been eating a vegetarian diet for 29 years, and I think probably next year I'm going to start to eat meat again. 29 years is a long time, and that's a good effort. So I think it would be a lot easier for me, more convenient, and I could certainly introduce a lot more variety in my diet by eating some of those cleaner, more available proteins. And yes, I know that I can get grass-fed beef whey powder, but that's difficult to find in my area, and it's expensive, and I can go through a tub of whey powder pretty quick. So my question to you is, what kind of gastrointestinal / digestive transition can I expect my body to make? And any advice that you may have to make this transition easier would be appreciated. I really enjoy the podcast, and you've been a real inspiration to me. Thank you.
29 years.
Wow. That's a long time.
That's
a
long time to not eat meat.
Probably one of the more important things that you should begin by doing is disguising your meat as vegetables, just to trick your brain. Just dress up your...
I don't think everybody's brain is quite as trickable as yours, Ben.
Dress up your hot dog like a giant leaf of kale and shove that bad boy down the hatch with some ketchup. No, seriously, yeah, your body is probably going to be deficient in some of the enzymes that you may need to digest meat. And those are some of the complaints that you get from folks who switch from veganism or vegetarianism into a meat-based diet. Now, because we're complete Luddites on this show, we're not going to talk about like the psychology of this much, or even talk about why or why not you would choose from a moral perspective to eat meat versus plants. We're just going to leave all that on the table and jump right into the hardcore science. Sorry,
okay.
Brock, I know you were excited.
I was all ready to get on my soapbox and start waving my arms around.
Yeah,
that's fine. That's fine.
Okay.
Whatever.
Baby animals with cute faces. Okay. Mm-hmm. So anyways, what can you do to make the transition easier? So what happens is you have this reaction in your stomach that occurs when you consume a very complex protein-containing food such as meat that involves hydrochloric acid. Acid being produced. Hydrochloric acid. And that
there you go again, Americans making things harsh.
That activates an enzyme called pepsin. And pepsin is what's going to break down some of those proteins into their individualized amino acids and make them more likely to be absorbed and used for muscle repair and neurotransmitter formation and all the good stuff that vegans and vegetarians completely miss out on. No, I'm just kidding. Like you can get that stuff from a vegan diet. It's just a little bit more difficult and in a less complete form. Anyways, though, so you may have to jumpstart your process of hydrochloric acid production, and I would consider taking a hydrochloric acid supplement that includes something called pepsin in it. For example, there's a company called Now Foods. I'll put a link to it in the show notes. They make an HCL with pepsin. And what you do is you just take 1 to 2 capsules right before you eat your meal. If you get a bunch of like heartburn as soon as you take HCL, you probably took too much. Many folks find that they start off with 1 to 2 capsules, and it works well to each week add 1 to 2 additional capsules of hydrochloric acid prior to your meal until you get to the point where you've got a little bit of acid, a little bit of heartburn going on. Then you back off to a maintenance dose of whatever you started off with. And you generally need to take hydrochloric acid for 30 to 60 days. And what that does is it'll gradually jumpstart your own ability to kind of make your endogenous hydrochloric acid a little bit more easily. If the idea of taking hydrochloric acid doesn't really make you all that excited, you can do...
a little terrifying, to be honest. Yeah,
you can do some other things. No, it does work well. It works really well in people who have heartburn and stuff who need to jumpstart that process. But you can take lemon juice.
I think most people know hydrochloric acid as the stuff that you used in like grade 7 science to dissolve a nail.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, that
yes,
is...
it is the same stuff that's in your stomach. That will dissolve a nail, but it's not like you're pouring it down your throat and letting it eat through your tongue and your esophagus and everything on the way down.
Mm. Pleasant thoughts.
It is safe to take.
Pleasant thoughts. Lemon juice is kind of an acidic pre-digestive that can work pretty well if you can't afford or don't want to take an HCL supplement with pepsin. Mm. And you can literally just do a glass of lemon juice prior to a meal. And you can achieve kind of a similar effect as HCL with pepsin if you take that glass of lemon juice. And when you consume it, we're talking about like squeezing the juice of one lemon into a glass of water. Swallow some digestive enzymes along with that. I'm a fan of the Caprazyme stuff, same company that makes that colostrum that we were talking about. And Caprazyme is simply a plant enzyme blend of a bunch of different enzymes, pretty much everything from like peptidase to lactase to all of your proteases for protein, to some cool things that they've developed for even people who have issues with like celiac, gluten intolerance, like sericalase, and they've got some papain, bromelain, so proteolytic enzymes are in there, and then a big botanical blend of stuff like aloe vera juice and yucca powder and stuff that kind of lines and coats your stomach and helps to heal your gut. It's actually part of the gut healing pack that I designed that's over at Pacific Elite Fitness. You know, it's got like colostrum and probiotics and that digestive enzyme blend that I just described, and then, you know, some antifungal oil of oregano, and you kind of put all that together and just take it every day. But you would at least want to use something like a basic full digestive enzyme complex like this Caprazyme stuff. So I'll link to that in the show notes, but that also prior to a meal. You could do one or the other. A lot of people do pretty well just doing the lemon juice with the full digestive enzymes spectrum. So some other things that can jumpstart digestion would be to use bitters. That's the same stuff that you would use as like a martini mix. Maybe you already have some in your house hanging around up there by the Grey Goose and the tonic water, some bitters. Mm-hmm. You can actually take a splash of bitters prior to a meal, and that can help you digest foods a little bit better. That's a very good digestive. You can pre-digest meat by making sure that you marinate it in acidic-like mediums. So, for example, like before I eat liver, I soak it for a couple of hours in lemon juice, and that not only helps to make it more digestible and a little bit softer, but it also can extract some potential toxins and things like that out of the liver. So you can use an acid like.
Soaking it in milk, but not in in lemon juice.
Milk does it as well. I like the flavor better though when I soak it in lemon juice, frankly. You could tenderize meat in digestive enzymes. Like you can literally take the digestive enzymes that I just talked about, and you can make whatever marinade you're going to make, and then just break open a couple of those capsules and you put them into the marinade, and that helps to tenderize the meat as well. There are some fruits like pineapple and papaya that contain bromelain and papain, and you could add the juices or even chunks of those fruits to whatever marinade that you're using for your meat, and those also will help to pre-digest the meat. So a lot of different ways you could kind of go about it, but all you're doing is making that meat a lot easier to digest. Eat it slowly when you're eating meat. Don't eat it with a lot of complex foods. The other thing that can really help is if you gradually transition yourself from something that has some meat-based amino acids and tallows and collagens and stuff like that without actually forcing you to digest the meat fibers itself. And a really, really perfect way to go for that is bone broth. So what you can do is start off by just making bone broth, and that's very easy to make with a crock pot and, you know, just like a basic, you know, chicken carcass or some, you know, pork bones or beef bones or whatever. There's recipes that abound on the internet if you just search for, you know, how to make bone broth, or you could even, if you wanted to, if you're lazy, you know, just order it to your house from a website like thebrothery.com. Anyways, though, start off with bone broth, and you can literally just do bone broth for a couple of weeks to kind of jumpstart your body's digestive ability to be able to process meat, and that can be a way to ease yourself in as well. They also make, if you wanted to order like a bone broth-like powder online, you can get organic gelatin from a company like Great Lakes or Bernard Jensen, and you can put that into smoothies or shakes. You know, like if you're a vegetarian and you're doing a kale shake every day and you want to start to make that transformation into adding meat in, you know, these organic gelatins are like beef-based organic gelatins, and they can put some of those compounds into your body, but they're pre-digested, so they're easier on your stomach when you're making that transition. So those are some of the things that you can start off with. And that's where I would start. Just some digestive enzymes, a little bit of something to jumpstart HCL production, whether that is an HCL supplement itself or some lemon juice. Use some bitters prior to eating. Pre-digest the meat by putting some acidic compounds or some enzymes into whatever you're marinating it in. And then ease yourself in with some bone broth or some gelatin. And yeah, you'll be chomping down on a giant Viking-sized leg of turkey in no time. So
a big Fred go. Flintstone chop.
That's right.
Rack of ribs. The only thing I'd say, I've used the papaya to tenderize my steaks before, and if you leave it on too long, it actually starts to like digest it a little too much. So be careful how much you leave it on there, because it can make like a layer on your meat of this sort of mealy, powdery yeah. kind of grossness, and yeah. it really takes the pleasure out of eating meat when that happens.
Fun with chemistry.
Hi, Ben and Brock. I love your show, and thanks for all the great content. My wife and I are expecting a baby. We have two questions for you. The first is, what are your thoughts on circumcision and the long-term health implications? We don't know if it's going to be a boy, so we have to plan for either. The second question is about cord blood storage. Are the benefits large enough to outweigh the cost? Are there any risks involved? And it seems like there are multiple companies that offer the service. How do we pick? Thanks, guys. I hope to hear from you before the big day.
Talking about fun with chemistry. This is a loaded question. Well, you know, circumcision is kind of a polarizing topic. I'm a little bit nervous to talk about this. Honestly,
we talked about vasectomies.
That's true.
Almost the same thing.
yeah. I'll just throw this out there right now. Like, I'm circumcised. You know, in my family heritage or whatever, we come from a Judeo-Christian background where that is highly encouraged. And so, even though I don't live in an area that's rampant with, you know, HIV and AIDS and some of the other reasons that you might end up wanting to be circumcised, you know, many people have it done for religious and ethical and traditional reasons.
From a similar background, and I am not circumcised, and neither is my father, and so on. So
blasphemer,
exactly,
blasphemous heathen. You are going to the depths of hell.
And there you go.
You need to get that
there is your answer.
You need to get that taken care of right away.
If you don't circumcise your child, going to hell.
Okay. So let's jump back into the science here, kind of like yes. we did with veganism okay. and vegetarianism. There is a buttload, pardon the analogy, of evidence that circumcision can reduce the risk of things like contracting HIV, human papilloviruses like HPV and other sexually transmitted diseases, you know, genital herpes, syphilis, a lot of these issues that you would kind of logically expect to be an issue if you had more tissue down there for stuff to collect in, right? So that's one of the reasons that kind of like removing the foreskin would be something that you would do to control the spread of disease. And it certainly has been shown in studies that circumcision can help to control the spread of some of those diseases in countries that have it done. And it may also have a protective effect against the risk of penile cancer, which is kind of pretty rare anyways, but there you go. So as far as circumcision is concerned, you know, it's generally safe when it's done by an experienced practitioner. I think that in a day and age where it seems like sexually transmitted diseases tend to be kind of an issue, it may end up, you know, being a prudent health step to take. Ultimately, like I mentioned, we're not going to get into the religious implications or ethical reasons or anything along those lines. You know, those are all up to you. But there is good evidence that it may protect against some of the potential health effects. Urinary tract infections was the other one I was going to mention.
There's a lot better interventions, are a lot more a lot more foolproof interventions than getting circumcised. I mean, a condom is going to protect you far better than just having that piece of skin removed.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. And I think that potentially a big part of kind of like the traditional reasons for circumcision stem from when it was first kind of introduced as like an ethical or moral, or in some cases a legal prerogative that we didn't have a lot of, you know, I think condoms were made out of what, like sheep
intestines,
sheep skin or sheep intestines or whatever,
stomachs or something,
possibly notoriously leaky, no advent of spermicide. Who knows, but what you're getting at, Brock, kind of leads into the next thing that I wanted to mention, that is that there are some cons to circumcision. Particularly, you're cutting off a heck of a lot of nerves. The foreskin contains a lot of nerves, and so you may actually experience less sexual pleasure when you're circumcised compared to someone who is uncircumcised. And that's just kind of a fact of life. So it's kind of a trade-off. Yeah, maybe you protect yourself from some potential sexual diseases, but you also are going to potentially remove some of your ability to enjoy sex. That being said, I'm circumcised. I enjoy sex a heck of a lot. And so, you know,
I'm not circumcised and I don't really enjoy sex at all.
So
I'm just
weird.
Kidding. I love it.
Awkward. So there you go. I mean, like,
I hope my girlfriend's not listening.
And I'm totally not going to pretend that I'm an expert on this, but that's pretty, I just exhausted my entire body of knowledge on circumcision. So there you go.
I think given the amount of people who are one way or the other in the world, there's no right answer here. It's not like half the population is walking around wishing they had their foreskin.
Yes.
I think probably after it happens, it's forgotten and that's that.
Yes. So
until you take your first shower at school gym and everybody starts looking at each other and going, "Hey, why does why who what?"
Yes. Okay. Well, anyways, now that all of our listeners
was that
are
too
gone,
much?
Cord blood banking. No, I think we're good. Cord blood banking. And by the way, folks, just write into the show if stuff totally offends you and you never want us to talk about it again. And we will probably ignore you and talk about stuff anyways because we talk about anything on the show. But you could still write in and it might make you feel better. So let's talk about cord blood. I think this is cool stuff. Because I am not a huge fan, for ethical reasons, of embryonic stem cell harvesting. I'm just not a fan of that. I am one of those dudes who believes that life begins at conception, and that's just me. But that's what I believe, and so I'm not a fan of, for example, like aborting an embryo and harvesting its stem cells. I just think that's not cool. Or creating an embryo to, for the purpose of aborting it and harvesting its stem cells. So that's just me.
I'm hurting my tongue from biting it. So hard.
I know. This is such, turning into such a political podcast.
Okay.
But cord blood stem cells are just blood that is in a newborn's umbilical cord after birth. And so you can take that stuff and you can harvest it, and it's full of stem cells, which are our body's master cells that can be used, basically can differentiate into other cells.
Super cool.
Yeah, so rather than let's say you need a bone marrow transplant and you're older and for some reason your parents had blood banked your umbilical cord stem cells, you could use those instead, and that would probably be a little bit more pleasant for you than going and harvesting stem cells from your own bone marrow, which from what I understand is not a pleasant process. So
yeah, it's a little painful, I think, but yeah, it's worth it in some cases for a little bit of pain to help you with some like blood cancer or something. That's a big deal.
Yeah, exactly. But the technology exists now to be able to harvest and bank cord blood. I did not do it with my kids because, frankly, I was unaware of its existence. And recently in writing my book, I started to dig into stem cells and using stem cells to repair more quickly, or using stem cell precursors like, marine phytoplankton to recover more quickly from exercise and injuries, and came across this. And I'm like, wow, that actually, would have been something useful to do. I have no clue how much it costs. I have no clue if insurance covers it. But I do know that if you've got all of these stem cells banked that you could potentially use when you need a rich source of stem cells, if you've had like a traumatic brain injury, a spinal cord injury, you need some type of a replacement. This would be something that is, of course, compatible to your own blood or potentially compatible to the blood of that of your family. So I'm a fan from everything I've seen in terms of harvesting and storing umbilical cord blood stem cells, and apparently they can be stored indefinitely under the proper conditions, like for the rest of all time. So kind of like Han Solo getting frozen in Star Wars. you're just there until the bounty hunter unfreezes you. So there you go.
There you go.
I wonder if there are stem cell bounty hunters out there. And I wonder if they're circumcised or uncircumcised.
They probably don't look as cool as Boba Fett, though. So.
By the way, if you're going to have a baby, there's one book that you should get called The Better Baby Book by Dave Asprey. That's a really good book. I highly recommend it. So go buy that because it's got a lot of really cool information about how to make your baby smarter. So recommend. You know, kudos to that book.
I have a terrible confession to make. Mm. Adam's baby was supposed to be born in April. I actually was going back through our voicemail service in which we had over a year's worth of voicemail and was cleaning it out. And I came across Adam's question and thought it was really cool and that maybe we could help other people by answering it. So I'm sorry, Adam, if this information is coming too late for you.
At the time of this recording, Adam is now deciding whether he's going to take his four-month-old in to get circumcised, basically.
Yeah.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah. Pretty much.
He's digging through the trash can for that umbilical cord. Where the hell did I put it? I need that back.
He made some good decisions. Yes. Adam, know that you're helping other people, even though we were extremely tardy on answering your question.
You were the sacrificial lamb, so to speak, Adam.
Hey, Ben and Brock, it's Charlie. Just wanted to say thanks so much for all your work. Had a quick question. My cardiologist recommended putting me on red rice yeast as a kind of preventative for cholesterol-lowering medication. I'm not sure if you know anything about red rice yeast or if there are any concerns about its effect on the GI tract. If you could let me know, that'd be really helpful. Or if you have any other recommendations for natural ways to handle cholesterol, that would be wonderful. Been able to do it somewhat through exercise and nutrition, but I do have a fairly strong family history. So if you could let me know what your thoughts are, I'd appreciate it. Thanks.
Well, first of all, let me say for Charlie that if you're listening to this podcast at the time that it comes out, stay tuned because this Friday I'm releasing a podcast with Jimmy Moore about his new book, Cholesterol Clarity. Uh-huh. And that's going to be a really, really good one for you to listen to.
Awesome. Like Jimmy and I. Yeah, this will answer the question perfectly.
Yeah. So first of all, when your cardiologist recommends that you go on red rice yeast as a way to help reduce the damage of cholesterol-lowering medication, that makes absolutely zero sense to me. And the reason that makes absolutely zero sense to me is that red yeast rice contains, albeit naturally occurring substances, but substances that closely parallel what you're going to find in statins. Specifically, inhibition of an enzyme called HMG-CoA reductase, which is an enzyme that triggers cholesterol production, and that's how a lot of popular statin drugs work, is they inhibit that enzyme. So red yeast rice products have a high concentration of the type of substances that are going to inhibit that enzyme. And because of that, the issues with red yeast rice extract parallel that of statins, particularly their ability to break down muscle tissue, which can lead to kidney failure as you have all this broken down muscle tissue circulating in your bloodstream. It's also known as rhabdomyolysis. You could replicate that by doing like 100 dumbbell curls, you know, for hours and hours on end and destroy your muscles that way. You could do the same thing by using statins or high amounts of this red yeast extract.
Wow, really? You can put yourself into rhabdomyolysis just by
rhabdo. Yeah, and kidney failure.
Can kill you.
Yeah, and related to that, in studies, red yeast rice has been shown to interfere with your body's ability to produce coenzyme Q10, which is another huge side effect of statin drugs. You run out of CoQ10, and that is one of your crucial internal antioxidants. It's also crucial for performance enhancement, utilization of oxygen, cellular metabolism. I think that any physician who prescribes a statin and does not recommend that someone get on CoQ10 is basically in malpractice, because a statin is so potent at reducing your stores of CoQ10 and completely depleting and draining them. But red yeast rice extract can do a similar thing. And it can also have some issues with damage to peripheral nerves, with, as our listener noted, inflammation in the gut, inflammation in the liver, increased levels of another inflammatory enzyme called creatine kinase. So I'm not a fan of it, and I have no clue how it would fight against the damage related to cholesterol-lowering medication, because it's kind of like paralleling it and doing a lot of the same things. Now, the dangers of statins go like even far above and beyond the muscle pain and the muscle weakness and the neuropathy and the drop in CoQ10 that you're going to get with something like red yeast rice, even though a statin can do all of those things. Statins have been shown to be associated with congestive heart failure, and that might be due to that drop in CoQ10 depletion, because you get decreased ability for you to produce ATP, specifically in cardiac tissue. You get a lot of downstream blood pressure lowering effects, which can lead to extreme dizziness while being on the use of statins. There are some issues with cognitive impairment and transient amnesia that have been proven to be shown an issue with statins. Statins have caused cancer in every study that has been done with rodents, putting them on statins, which is crazy. Pancreatitis, which is inflammation of your pancreas, depression. Ton of issues. There are some small populations that have been shown, you know, like older males, for example, I think above 80 or something like that, that have been shown to have a very small lowering in risk of heart disease when being on statins, but the risks far outweigh the benefits, in my opinion. And we've actually talked, like, I talked about this for like 20 minutes once on a podcast. If you go to bengreenfieldfitness.com and do a search for statins, like, I just kind of breezed over it just now, but it's a pretty dang big issue. So
yeah, I think Dr. Minkoff also went through tons of this stuff on the Endurance Planet podcast as well. So if you go over there and do a search for statins, you'll probably come across that podcast. And Dr. Minkoff is quite an expert on the subject too. So
speaking of the Endurance Planet podcast, they also just had an awesome podcast with the guy who's doing the movie Serial Killer, which talks about how cereal affects your heart, and specifically,
and this is cereal like grains.
Cereal like grains, and how he literally like got all this genetic testing and hacked his genes to, because both his dad and his uncle, who were awesome runners and distance runners and athletes, died from heart attacks. And this guy figured out why and fixed it. And it's kind of related to this. So go listen to that episode on Endurance Planet. It's amazing. Just Google Endurance Planet Serial Killer, or type in endurancepianet.com and go check it out. Anyways, though, this whole question returns to kind of like the lens through which you see the world of health, because lowering cholesterol, as you'll learn in the podcast that comes out later with Jimmy Moore, is not really that big of a deal. Like, that shouldn't be your goal, is to lower cholesterol. Your goal should be to ensure that the cholesterol that you do have, the healthy cholesterol that you do have, is not subjected to inflammation and oxidation. And so rather than getting on red rice yeast extract and rather than getting on statin, just shut down inflammation. I'll tell you some of the best ways that you can do it. Avoid heated vegetable oils. Okay, so when you're in at a restaurant, unless something's been heated in coconut oil or avocado oil or regular olive oil, not extra virgin olive oil, but regular olive oil or some stable fat like butter or ghee or something like that, don't order it. So you got to be really careful, especially places where they like stir fry foods, like Asian restaurants and stuff like that, and in your own home. So you avoid heated oils. Okay,
so those only eat at French restaurants, because they'll be using really heavy butter.
Only eat at French restaurants or restaurants that serve just kale and raw sesame seeds. So there you go. That one bistro. Avoid refined sugars, because those are going to amp up triglyceride levels like they're going out of style. Fructose is one of the biggies there too. I'm not talking about fructose and its naturally found format with phytonutrients and fiber and everything in a nice apple. I'm talking about like any like concentrated form of fructose, like high fructose corn syrup. Like avoid it like the plague if you're concerned about cholesterol, because not only can that cause higher triglycerides, but it also can stimulate clumping of your blood platelets. And clumping of blood platelets is a great name for a band, but not a good thing to be happening in your body.
Yeah.
So
avoid it like the plaque.
Like the plaque.
The plaque that forms in your arteries. Yeah.
take a really good fish oil or a really good cod liver oil, because the vitamin A and the vitamin D and what's called the EPA in that is going to be awesome for shutting down specifically inflammation of cholesterol and high levels of what is called ApoB, which is your cholesterol particle number. And a few other things. You're going to need lots of anti-inflammatory prostaglandins circulating through your bloodstream. Ironically, you get those from saturated fats like coconut oil and coconut milk and grass-fed beef and fatty cuts of wild fish and stuff like that. So it's okay to eat that stuff, assuming that you're avoiding the other stuff that's going to cause it to become inflamed, like sugars and fructose and things of that nature. I'm a big fan of primrose oil or borage oil or black currant oil. I've mentioned before on the show that like in my kale shake, I add this really nice cold processed oil called a Panaceta 5-seed oil blend. I also take Super Essentials fish oil, which has a bunch of primrose oil added to it. These are all sources of another thing called GLA. Now, saturated fats help you to make anti-inflammatory prostaglandins. So does GLA. Okay, so you get those into your diet from like a nice fish oil that has this primrose in it, or this that oil that I take is called Panaceta. Another example that would be like Udo's oil. A few other things that you should consider. I talked about coconut oil and coconut milk, but not only is it good for the saturated fat, but it also protects you against bacteria and viruses that lead to inflammation, specifically in your arterial wall. So, ironically, once again, defying conventional wisdom, use those. And then finally, avoid any sources of oxidized cholesterol. A few of the biggies are like, I can think of one biggie, really, for all the people listening in, and that is whey protein. That's not processed via cold processing methods. That's a great way to oxidize the cholesterol and the proteins. Like powdered eggs are another example. I don't know that a lot of our listeners like downing spoonfuls of powdered eggs unless they're eating the
army or something.
Yeah, if you're eating the continental breakfast at Comfort Inn all the time, maybe.
Yeah.
But look at your whey. Make sure your whey is freaking cold processed. So be careful if it's not. If you can't find cold processed whey or you don't like it, and by the way, that Mount Capra Deep 30 stuff that we talked about earlier, that's cold processed. Just use like a pea or a hemp or a rice-based protein product and just use that instead of powdered whey. So nothing powdered that is from an animal source. Powdered milk, powdered eggs, powdered whey, unless it's all like super-duper cold processed. So I know that was a bunch of stuff I just listed off. Hit rewind if you need to listen to it again. But ultimately, when it comes to lowering your cholesterol, that's kind of like a bad operating
assumption.
Hypothesis. Assumption, yeah, to go off of anyway. So there you go.
Hi, Ben and Brock. This is Amy calling from Chicago. I just got diagnosed with a stress fracture in one of my metatarsals. So I was just wondering if there's anything aside from like what's normally recommended by doctors and some other people in the running community about, you know, the best ways to heal a bone. I've also been using a bone stimulator that my doctor gave me, and I would be interested on your thoughts on that. It's the Exogen 4000 bone stimulator. Thank you. I love the podcast.
A bone stimulator.
Bone stimulator. The Exogen.
The Exogen 4000.
I have here.
The Exogen 4000 bone stimulator.
Why do we love Marvin the Martian so much on this show?
Because he's just badass. He's Marvin the Martian.
Yeah, I guess.
We like him. Anyways, though, the use of electronic stimulation for healing fractures is something that's pretty cool. Now, I have geeked out on this podcast before about all the different supplements that you could take to heal bone fractures.
Yeah.
I'll link to them in the show notes so you could review. It's like lactoferrin, liquid trace minerals, some vitamin D, some magnesium, and some K2. Boom. And I've gone over that in great detail in previous podcasts, so I won't geek out on that. Just go to the show notes. I've got links to my supplement stack, so to speak, for anybody that's got a stress fracture. Should not be ignoring that. But bone stimulation, using electrical stimulation, there are a variety of different ways to do it. So you've got ultrasound, you've got pulsed electromagnetic field therapy, you've got electrical muscle stimulation. And the way that a lot of these things work is they send these low-intensity waves into bone tissue that stimulates either a release of healing factors or osteoblastic activity or regrowth of bone. Frankly, most of them are kind of pretty easy to find these days in a lot of different therapeutical clinics. And bone stimulation devices are something that have been being produced and marketed for a while. Because when I got out of college in 2005, I worked for a company called Biomet, and we did hip and knee surgical implants. And there were two things that we were kind of marketing, so to speak, on the side, in addition to the implants themselves. And that was platelet-rich plasma injections to enhance internal growth factors, and then also external bone growth stimulators or implantable bone growth stimulators. So Johnson & Johnson and Smith & Nephew and, all these companies make these.
Implantables, so they'd actually put it under the skin?
But you can get home units too. So most of the studies that look into the use of electrical and electromagnetic fields to enhance things like transferrin and calcitonin, lactoferrin, osteoblastic activity, they've shown to have pretty good efficacy. And there's varying levels, varying frequencies, but the things that have been studied the most and shown to be effective, one is this technology that's using this low intensity pulsed ultrasound that you talked about with this Exogen 4000. And it's not going to work to heal, a full on fracture, whatever. If your femur's sticking out of your skin, you probably know about that anyways, and you're probably at the doctor getting that thing unionized. But for a basic stress fracture, yes, low intensity pulsed ultrasound can work. This other form called extracorporeal shockwaves or ESWT, that has a little bit of research behind it as well. Something as simple as electrical muscle stimulation, these EMS devices like a Compex, that can work. The thing that has the most research behind it, though, would be pulsed electromagnetic field therapy. And that would be using something like, I've talked about the Earth Pulse before, for example, which I put underneath my mattress when I sleep at night because it releases – it's basically like grounding or earthing on steroids. Like it releases the same magnetic pulse released by the planet Earth, and it helps you to sleep. But if you take the North Pole end of this device and you just jam it up against an injured area of soft tissue, or you hold it up against a stress fracture and you're doing daily applications several times per day, 15 to 20 minutes, it can stimulate healing. And in bone, that would be through stimulation of osteoblastic activity. In soft tissue, basically what it does is it upregulates mitochondrial metabolism and blood flow. So, they're not cheap. That's like a $600 device, but it's called an Earth Pulse, and lots of good research behind pulsed electromagnetic field therapy and fractures. This ultrasound that you talked about, the Exogen 4000, that would also be something that would work. There's just not quite as much research behind it as there is behind PEMF. So there you go.
Very cool.
Just keep it away from sensitive areas, children and kittens, and you should be fine.
Hi, Ben and Brock. This is Wes. First of all, I just wanted to thank you so much for the podcast and the website. I get a lot of information there. My question today is about varicose veins and deep vein thrombosis. I don't think I've heard you talk about it much. Basically, I'm a 38-year-old stay-at-home dad with a small business. So your advice on minimalist training has really helped to keep me fit in spite of my busy schedule. But basically, I'm having varicose and leg pain. Just came on this year, and it got so bad once that I went to the urgent care. And basically, they just said, take some aspirin, wear compression socks, and look into lasers. But what I want to know is what I can do to heal my veins and valves in my veins that are not working right and causing me all this pain, because it gets really bad. Elevating my feet helps a little bit. My legs feel fine when I'm exercising. It's just when I'm standing around taking care of household stuff or working all day. It's a little bit scary for me because my grandfather and an uncle both seem to be very healthy, you know, runners and downhill skiers and stuff. And right about my age, they just keeled over and died. And nobody can tell me what exactly it was, just something with the heart. So, again, thanks for the show. And I look forward to the next podcast. Thanks. Bye.
Well, first of all, we have kicked the varicose vein horse to death on this podcast before.
To death.
Use the handy dandy search function. Before you ask a question, use the search function. Like, search for varicose veins on Ben Greenfield Fitness. You're going to find two previous pretty expansive podcast episodes that we did on natural remedies for varicose veins. We've talked about horse chestnut extract, grapeseed extract, butcher's broom, all of these pretty cool natural treatments for varicose veins that they strengthen veins, they reduce fluid leakage from vessel walls, they improve areas of venous insufficiency. I would definitely go back and follow the links that I'll put in the show notes for those. And remember, we transcribe every show, so you can go read those too. And by the way, people, I shouldn't say people, that's rude. By the way, our valuable listeners, I do pay out of my pocket to get these things transcribed. So if you need to go read them, they're all there. Isn't that cool? Anyways, so let's talk about things we haven't talked about before when it comes to varicose veins. Some of like the little things you can do during the day. It's like I use a standing workstation. Now, I use compression socks and compression tights when I'm standing for long periods of time to allow for better venous sufficiency. But I also will stop sometimes and put my feet up for a while. Like during lunch, I usually work during lunch with my feet up. I don't work during lunch. I'm reading my Kindle or watching something on Hulu during lunch, but I do it with my feet up. Okay. Now what that means is I just get my feet higher than my head.
Really up.
Yeah, well, the way that I do it is I just sit down, usually outside at this point in the year in my garden, and I'm sitting in a chair and I put my feet up on the table because my mom's not there to tell me not to.
Is it higher than your heart?
That's right. But I also do inversion. Like I use an inversion table. I have an inversion table out in my garage. You can usually find them on Craigslist or, you know, a classified website pretty easily. Usually some rich dude bought an inversion table and never used it. So you could probably get it for almost free if you offer to go pick it up. That can really help with blood flow back out of the legs. But there are a variety of really cool yoga poses that are inversion yoga poses. And some of them are frankly pretty easy to do, like a plow pose, a supported shoulder stand. It's kind of funny. My kids do headstands and handstands against the wall because what I do, I do the whole like, you know, CrossFit style workout where I'll take a couple of dumbbells, put them up against the wall and take a break and do like 5 or 10, headstand or handstand, push-ups or shoulder ups. And you can also just like stand there or hang there in that pose just to drain blood out your legs. And I mean, you can do that a few times during the day. I'll put a link in the show notes to some of the more common yoga inversion poses, from like the easy pose, like the plow pose, to a full on, you know, handstand, which is called a Vishanasavasana. No, I'm just kidding. I have no clue what it's called. It's just most yoga phrases sound like that. So go to
They all end with an
inversion. Vishanasavasana. But inversion poses, like yoga inversion poses, full respect to all the yoga practitioners who are listening in. I apologize.
Yeah. We're not making fun. We're just having fun.
But use compression gear. Get your feet higher than your head and do that several times during the day. And in addition to all of the natural remedies that I mentioned in other shows, which you can go check out, that will help out quite a bit, because a varicose vein is just a big dilated blood vessel that is usually due to your body having a hard time pumping that blood back up out of your leg. So give your body a little bit of help. And if you do have to sit, don't cross your legs or do anything that's going to increase venous pressure in your legs and your feet, because a long period of time spent in that cross-legged position is going to weaken the blood vessel walls and can also lead to varicose veins. So, you know.
If you have to cross your legs, do it at the ankles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because once you get on your mini skirt and your high heels, the last thing you want is for that unsightly varicose vein to go down the back of your calf, west to. Also, I would say that deep vein thrombosis is probably a bigger concern there. So,
yeah, absolutely.
You know, same reason that I am really, like, when I travel to a race or a triathlon or something like that, I usually give myself a padding of at least 24 to 48 hours before I'm hopping back on a plane. So, you know, just like sitting for long periods of time, period, not a great idea. But throw an inversion and compression gear, you know, or old man socks, as we like to call them, and all that stuff can help out quite a bit, Wes. So hopefully that helps you.
All right. Well, that's awesome. That wraps this episode up, except for our iTunes review.
Give something cool away. By the way, we had our 10,000th follower on Twitter, so I sent them out a big old 7-pound bag of magnesium salts, and we gave out a bunch of Timex watches on the Facebook page. And nice. for this guy from iTunes, Ubermensch44, I am going to hook you up. Dude, I don't even know what I'm going to hook you up with. I got so many goodies that I can give away. I'm sitting in my office right now. I got boxes and boxes of, like, T-shirts and bars and supplements. I'm just going to throw a bunch of stuff in a bag and just send it to your house straight from me to you. And if you want to get free stuff sent to you, just leave a review on iTunes. We'll put a link in the show notes. Or you go to iTunes and do a search for Ben Greenfield Fitness. And
it better be 5 stars, and it better be amusing.
Yes, it has to be amusing, because the last thing that we want is, you know, a review that's just
bore,
like,
the listeners.
Yes, I learned so much about fitness.
We don't need your help.
I got to know my own body so well when I listened to. Okay, so anyway, Ubermensch44 says, "Escape mediocrity," which caught my attention right away because it sounds like a movie intro. Escape mediocrity.
Starring Tom Cruise.
I wonder how Ubermensch 44. Is he like German, you think? Ubermensch 44.
That would be a good guess, I guess.
No, he's Ubermensch 44. He is, who's the guy from Austin Powers? You know? The guy who says mini me. Oh gosh, it's on the tip of my tongue now. The Austin Powers guy. Not mini me. Dr. Evil.
Hey.
Ubermensch 44. If you are truly serious about taking your body and mind to the next level, then you should listen to this podcast and follow Ben. The information he provides and tools and gadgets he recommends are cutting edge. And that's the part where I bring my pinky up to my mouth. I'm not done yet, though. And yet, Ben shows you how you can implement them in your own life to achieve superhuman performance in your mental and physical endeavors without having a large bankroll or professional athletic trainer or sharks with lasers.
I
made up that last part. The sharks with lasers. And then he says, now there are no more excuses not to escape mediocrity.
Bravo.
Ubermensch, dude, send me your address and I'm gonna send some cool crap your way, Ubermensch. So there you go.
Maybe we should send some cool crap to Mike Myers as well, just to placate
That's
him
right.
for your terrible impression.
Well, didn't I do his fat bastard the other day too as well?
Oh yeah, I think you did. Yeah, we definitely
right.
owe him some stuff.
That's right. And maybe we should end with that for our listeners. There's one other URL that I'm gonna give to you that you need to go to if you love this podcast, and I'm gonna tell it to you just like fat bastard.
All right.
You ready?
Go for it.
Don't forget to go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/love. That's bengreenfieldfitness.com/love. Now get in my belly.
Visit bengreenfieldfitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness, nutrition, and performance advice.